Seven, Snoqualmie Valley Wildlife Area and Dog Training Briefing. Melinda and Russ.
I support dog training, Mr. Chair. In fact, I'm going to retire from my day job, and I'm going to get a couple more laboratories.
I used to do field trials with my setter, my first setter.
Oh, yeah, it's fun.
Morning, everybody. Thank you, directors and commission, for giving us this opportunity to present. And thanks to folks behind me. There are a lot of familiar faces, the people we've been working with over the past year or so in Region 4. I'm the Wildlife Program Manager in the region, and supervise Brian Bame, the Snoqualmie Wildlife Area Manager, responsible for management of the Snoqualmie Wildlife Area. We're going to talk with you a little bit this morning about two of the units, one primarily Cherry Valley, that has been under some scrutiny over the last year. I wanted to first just give you sort of the bottom line here. The issue in the Snoqualmie Wildlife Area, in the Cherry Valley unit in particular, is that this is a relatively small unit, and we've had increased population growth over the past couple of decades. And in looking back through some previous wildlife area management plans, 2006, there was some comments by the current wildlife area manager that increased use of the units from folks from over the hill, Seattle, Redmond, Bellevue, is creating some problems, and that we need to start to look at the effects of that increased population and how it's affecting the wildlife area in general. So looking back that far, there's been some issues, and there have been some changes. Yeah.
You say relatively small. How many acres?
It's about 400 acres. Half of which, a little less than half of which is wooded. And then the other half is primarily wetlands and a small area of upland.
Yeah. Russ, excuse me.
You mentioned, can you be a little bit more specific? I mean, what issues are we talking about? Like trash or kind of?
Yes. In general, there are a lot of different users of these wildlife areas. Of this unit, there's pheasant hunters, duck hunters, bird watchers, wildlife watchers, walkers, dog training, bird dog trainers, and some other miscellaneous folks, photographers. And so just given the location of that unit, we're getting increased use. And so we've been challenged with trying to get people around the table and talk about, well, what do we do here, folks? And Melinda is going to go through a PowerPoint telling you a little bit about the plan. But the idea of going back to historical use for dog training is, I think, not a strong possibility. We're trying to reach a happy medium. We've met with folks over the past year. We have a meeting on March 28th. When we're going to sit around a table and roll up our sleeves and saying, okay, what are we going to do about this gate? How can we get you to the ponds you need to get to, and how are these ponds going to be managed? Who's going to do the work? In addition to having a lot of people on this wildlife area, we have one wildlife area manager who manages the entire wildlife area, and that hasn't changed over couple decades with the growth. So there are issues with his ability to get everything done, and we're going to reach out to the dog training community, and they've agreed to step up and help out in the volunteer as volunteers to help achieve the goals that we're putting forward in the dog training plan, which is to extend the acreage from 35 to 65 acres for dog training purposes, for dog training purposes. So that's sort of a brief overview. I'm glad that we're going to be able to hang out and answer any specific questions. I am optimistic that we're going to be able to come together and work through some difficult issues, but I'm also realistic, and I know that not everybody's going to be happy here, but we're doing the best we can.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. I'm Melinda Posner, the Wildlife Area Planning, Recreation, and Outreach Section Manager in the Lands Division for Wildlife Program, and I'm pleased to be here today. And I'll also add that I am a half-full kind of person as well, and so I am optimistic, and I've been feeling very positive about the efforts of folks like those who spoke today and their patience and their repeated follow-through and coming together and meeting with us. And I did note their questions and comments. We'll try to, some of those might get addressed in this presentation, and then we could hit them directly if there are others. So with that, located in Region 4, Snoqualmie Wildlife Areas in the northwest part of the state, with six units that are in areas in King and Snohomish counties, two of the fastest growing states counties in the state. So all of the units are very close to high population areas, and Cherry Valley and Crescent Lake, the two that really are the focus of our discussion, Cherry Valley primarily, they are located with very easy access off State Route 203. So lots of folks can get there pretty easily. Both units were acquired in 1974. They're of similar size, Cherry Valley 386-ish and Crescent Lake 360. They host similar species and habitats and recreation. Now, going back some time when the lands were acquired, the primary purpose of acquiring these lands was to preserve and enhance natural stream drainages, floodplain and wetland habitat, and provide hunting, training of bird dogs, and other wildlife-related recreation. So the 2006 wildlife area plan that Russ mentioned noted the pressure of urban development that was closing in on these units. They're relatively small, again, in kind of little small islands in really populated areas with a lot of urban growth. So what we were seeing at that time, I was not, you know, with the department, but very high use is documented in that 2006 plan. And lots of recreation that was not imagined when the lands were first acquired. The things that we're seeing in lots of our lands, the pet walking and jogging and orienteering and paintball and other types of things. So what we were experiencing, some of the issues, overcrowding, harassment of wildlife, and conflicts between users, in addition to litter and destruction and vandalism of our facilities, gates, signs, you know, which we, again, continue to experience. And to assess the impact of dogs, specifically, the 2006 plan recommended a unit-by-unit assessment to kind of figure out what's being used, how is it being used, how can we address this better. The 2006 plan also talked about looking for other lands where bird dog training and expansion of waterfowl hunting could occur. So those are some of the things that were documented at that time that do inform some of what we do now. So with the hiring of a dedicated manager in 2013, we began a more comprehensive approach to management. And previously, there was one manager who was split between Snoqualmie and the Skagit Wildlife Area, which was one large complex. So we prioritized salmon and wetland restoration. We reintroduced agriculture, which helps enhance the hunting opportunities, provides food and cover. We repaired a lot of infrastructure, and we did start to take steps to address some of these conflicts by looking at the individual units. So, relative to dog training, yes. Question.
Can you go back to the previous slide for a second? Reintroduced agriculture, and then you said because that enhanced hunting. Can you talk to that specifically about what kind of hunting it enhanced and?
Yes, so for waterfowl hunting in particular, and there was some agriculture previously, I don't know the extent of it, but the idea was to manage the agriculture to enhance the wildlife opportunities and for hunting. So,
well, it looks to me like they're cutting corn, so I know a little bit about waterfowl hunting, so they're cutting corn.
Chair, we have a cost share program out there with a farmer. Where he leaves a leaf crop, rows of corn for pheasants, primarily to hide out in. We also grow barley, or he grows barley, and there's a leaf crop there. We're in the process of working with the bird dog training community to find out where is the best place for grass. So the farmer can go in there and cut grass a couple times a year, three times a year, and have that be compatible with the needs of the bird dog training community. So there's going to be a rotation of grass, corn, barley. That's the vision anyway.
Is this a farmer that has a long-term lease on this or short-term lease?
Well, we have in the past had three-year leases with the farmers out there. Given the fact that this is a year where we're working on the Snoqualmie Wildlife Area Plan, and there may be some concerns through the SEPA process, we've been asked to curtail that to a one-year lease this year.
And he answers to the manager?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you be, again, more specific when you talk about conflicts? I'd like you to address that more specifically and also kind of with an emphasis on how it relates to the dog training use.
I was going to look for the numbers, but the very first, the largest impact that the area has seen, and can, I mean, maybe it's less now because of the actions that have been taking, but it has to do with dogs generally. There, so increases in the numbers of people who are coming to the area and increases of pet walking and increases in the other activities like hunting and bird dog training and wildlife viewing, hiking. One of the units is very, Stillwater is very close. It has a King County walking trail alongside it, so lots of people drive up and park the car, take their dogs for a walk. So the dogs in particular is a big issue. In terms of...
How are the... So, help me. I don't,
okay.
I mean, how are they an issue? I mean, is it... are they dispersing wildlife then?
Yes, so harassing wildlife. It starts from just even the parking. There isn't really adequate parking for people to, for 100 people to come and walk their dog.
And so the answer is just to lock the gate then?
No, not necessarily. So let me give a little bit more background, and then I'll get right to that. We're in agreement with Russ and I about...
Commissioner Cover just wants...
Go ahead.
I just want to follow up on Commissioner Kehoe's comments a little bit. I've owned some Labradors. I ran them on Brooke Vanderbreek's truck. They were good dogs, and soon I'm going to retire and I'm going to have more because it's something I enjoy. But if you're talking about hunting dogs that are in training, these dogs are not a nuisance. They are obedient and then some. They heel, they sit on the line until they're released. They're not crazy dogs running around out there chasing critters around. Yeah. They don't do that. They're well-mannered dogs. So I want to make sure that what I'm hearing is related to specifically what's happening, if possible. And I'm not trying to put you in a box,
yeah,
but I know about hunting dogs and how well trained and what the whole rationale for being out there with them is. And they're on the truck until it's their time to run, and then they're back on the truck.
Yeah. Yes, and it's not to imply that the pet walking dogs are the same as the bird dog training, but small areas with lots of use now, lots of folks doing all of these things together, then sets up an opportunity for us to look at how do we best manage this unit, provide those uses that are the traditional uses, and also manage some of those that are nuisance uses, not bird dog training. We want to encourage that if we can. Hard to imagine right now going back to the full use of Terry Valley, but in 2014, we took action to designate, so clearly putting on a map where dog training could occur. And this was Terry Valley and Crescent Lake. We posted signage about the training areas and also the leash laws and also the seasons for training and provided consistent enforcement. And generally, we experienced some complaints, some phone calls. Most people who were pet walkers, I think, responded pretty well. And over time, we had less and less of that. But the dog training community, who had really come to rely on Snoqualmie units as a key place, as we've heard, for their dog training and events, they weren't satisfied by this new arrangement, and we understand why. So we met at that time, I staff did, in 2015 to develop a common plan. It never was able to get traction. And then when we started the wildlife area planning effort, we said we're going to reinvigorate that idea. We heard 100 people. We had a public scoping meeting that had almost 100 people, and almost all of them were dog training interests. So, yes, we knew we had folks to work with. So we put together a subgroup, and we've been meeting with them since last summer to come up with a proposal that could meet, to have something for everyone, really. So the proposal is to maintain the Crescent Lake unit at 11 acres, 11.5, but expand the Cherry Valley to 65 acres. And I think there was some concern expressed this morning about whether that was 65 or would it only still be 35. But 65 is the expansion, and retaining 15 acres in the hunting season. It also requires us to jointly manage the units with help with volunteers, and the idea is to design the agriculture to be most beneficial for the dog training, and because there's a benefit to us as well, because it helps us manage some of those lands and some of the invasive species. So it also allows us to evaluate the plan in the future, and I understand the concern that if we try this and it doesn't work, then this is just 1 year and it'll be taken away. And my half-full mentality says, please be patient and trust us in that we want to provide a place where we can continue to have this. We want to try this plan if we can get support from everybody around it. And the wildlife area planning process is going to recommend that we look at the Stillwater unit in the future to do that unit-by-unit assessment, as well as using the two-year updates of the wildlife area plan, which are regularly done, to consider how it's going, are there improvements or refinements that we need to make. So I'll just mention that the wildlife area planning kicked off. We put these kind of ideas together, but worked with the subgroup on a parallel track with the idea that the dog training proposal would be part of the wildlife area plan. So this is where we are today. We would like to continue and be collaborative in developing a volunteer plan. We did share the proposal with the dog training community, but I would say there are probably others. That community is a large group. Has everybody seen it? I don't know. But we have been working with the smaller subgroup to work out the details of this proposal. So we're optimistic that we wanted to provide training opportunities in 2017. And we're going to move forward with that adaptively as best we can as we get the plan finalized. Hopefully that would be before the end of the summer. As Russ mentioned, we have a meeting scheduled the 28th of this month to talk through the details, looking beyond that to evaluating future units, including Stillwater, which was a third of those south units. And then just a note that really this is an opportunity to use these lessons learned to inform our other work. We have other wildlife areas that have dog training interests and need potentially some clarity about where that's going to take place and how it's going to take place. You may be familiar with Scatter Creek and the dog training there, where it's very clear now there's a map and there are rules about how the dog training activity is to be done in order to balance all of the uses that are happening out there. So thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. And I wanted to make sure we addressed, I think Cindy had a couple questions.
Questions? More? Yes.
One thing that comes to my mind is I did visit one of the wildlife areas years ago somewhere out there. I don't remember which one it was, but we were touring. We were doing a little tour, and the swans were on site. Very impressive. And it was at a time when we were just implementing our new conduct rules on Department of Lands, and I remember that whole process of trying to grapple with the litter, the graffiti, the vandalism. And the fact that so many of these wildlife areas are small and somewhat remote, you've got one person managing a lot of different locations. I just remember how it sounds nice to have open gates and welcome people, but the consequences are real, too, and the costs. I just remember how much we were struggling and our budget's gone down. So as you're talking about this and trying to accommodate more and more users and the conflicts, I empathize because it's just... And so one of the... And the blackberries were another big thing. Invasive species and getting volunteers to come in and help you is not a simple thing. So I'm empathetic, and I wonder if you could explain to us a little bit more about the funding picture and why the gates are closed, why we don't have sufficient parking available to people. So that element of it needs to be brought forward.
Sure. So thank you, Commissioner. I wanted to bring to your attention that we do have an expanding swan population. They're coming further south, and one of our wildlife area...
Wildlife Area Advisory Committee.
Yeah, one of our advisory committee members is quite concerned about the Crescent Lake and that the expanding swan population there, and the result of expanding dog use on that area by off-leash dog folks, primarily, not the bird dog training area. But that's why we have these designated bird dog training areas, so that we can designate them as such, and so they're, and we can sort of compartmentalize these units to make them available for other users, including wildlife. That's that. So, to your question on the gate issue, we kept the gate closed because we had some restoration work there, and we were concerned about people coming in and jumping on equipment and putting sugar in the gas tanks and all this other stuff. And then there was evidence of, there has been also past evidence of people coming in after dark and just, you know, doing donuts in the ag fields and doing other kinds of things. And so we did a couple years ago try to work out a system so that, or we looked into alternatives to that closed gate. Would we have a card for the dog, bird dog trainers? Would there be a combination on the on the gate and so forth? It didn't come together. So right now the gate is closed, but I've asked the enforcement agent who's responsible for that area, would you be open to leaving that gate open for a year during this pilot period when we're working with the dog training, bird dog training folks, and leave that gate open and see what happens. Check it out for a year. And that would allow access for folks to get closer into the areas where they want to do their work by the ponds. And he said, yeah, we could check it out and see how it goes for a year. We're also, and that's what we're going to do on the 28th, figure out where we could, if we had to, move the gate to make it work out for us and the bird dog training folks.
Is the equipment out of there now?
Yes. Yeah, the equipment's out of there.
In the parking facility?
Parking, I'm not as familiar with the parking situation. I do know that the bird dog training community doesn't like to go to a parking area or from a parking area way out to a bird dog training area, designated area. And that's one of the reasons why Manager Bain brought the year-round area closer to the parking area. And so he was trying to accommodate them in that way. Again, something that is going to be worked out. I'm optimistic that there are alternatives that can work. They won't be perfect, but they can work. The other thing is they may not be perfect this year or next year, but we're working towards something that is going to work out for folks.
Mentioned that in 2006 we were going to go looking for other parcels. I have two pieces to this question. Is Stillwater the only one that we've identified that we're working on, or are there others? And my other question is, when people go out there to train their dogs during dog training, I guess there's kind of a season before hunting season, is that a everyday thing, or is there scheduling that could happen that would accommodate people perhaps on a larger area?
That's something that could look into scheduling. It's been brought up before, so not to say it wasn't a brilliant idea, but it has been discussed, and something that hopefully folks in the audience will remember, and we can bring it up on the 28th as an option. We ran into a little difficulty with the combination, just the logistics around that. It just seems to me like a lot easier to keep the gate open or to move the gate so that people can access the areas where they need to access without having free range to the other 300 acres or 350 acres.
And I do have to sit here and chuckle because it's all your perspective. The department owns basically a little over 15% of our county, vast tracts of ground. And to be quite honest with you, is probably the least user-friendly ground in the county. They have done nothing as far as we've suggested, trying to open up some parking lots and stuff. So I am sympathetic to your guys' plight on this, very sympathetic to it. And there again, vandalism and litter is an issue, but I can't imagine these people sitting back here. If they were closer to my place, I'm sure they'd be welcome to come and train their dogs on my place, because I'm sure that the place is cleaner once they leave than when they show up. So to me, these are the kind of things we need to try and encourage, not discourage, because bird dogs are fun to work with, and there again, it's good with kids, and we keep all giving lip service to try and do what we can to get kids out there and involved. So I'm sympathetic that in this side of the world, yes, you get a whole lot of people, but these are the kind of groups that we need to try and do our best to work with and accommodate, because that's what we're in, is in the hunting world.
Bob Turner's in the house.
So I guess I would defer and ask you guys to please keep working with them on this. And we need to do everything we can to support people like this that want to use the department grounds. Because at the end of the day, it's still public ground. It's their ground. We're just in charge of managing it, and we need to do our best to possibly accommodate them. So thank you.
Thank you. And we find when we work with volunteers, what we have are more eyes out, and they set an expectation about behavior. So that's really what we'd like to do, is come up with a solution that will work for that to continue.
Thank you. And maybe if you have time, both of you, to talk with, I know you've talked with all of the folks behind it, but to spend some time and come back to us in the not-too-distant future with some ideas of some plans of those half-full glasses that I'm really going to be sick about talking about. It goes against a lot of my nature. But I think that it's well said, and I think we understand the issues and the problems, but also we also appreciate these are good partners to have. I've been a field trial person myself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, can I ask Mr. Olson to come up and just if you're so willing, and let the commission know what you would like from the commission to do in connection with this.
Bob, I'd rather send my wife up.
Okay.
Smart man. Smart man.
Or someone from the group. It doesn't have to be. Sorry, Jim. I know you, and so maybe I picked on you.
You're supposed to be at North of Falcon anyway.
Some things are more important to me at this moment.
Well, we have been working with the department. The meetings began in June after the public scoping meeting. But one of the biggest issues that we have is why we were restricted to a 10-acre size piece of land to train on, and why that was called the official year-round dog training area. When we look at some of the information we got through the Public Information Act, we see an email and conversations with the area manager indicating that, I guess 10 acres is a good amount of land to throw a bumper around and call it dog training, so that's no skin off our back if we give them 10 acres. We used to have 125 acres in Cherry Valley, and it was available to us from the time the land was acquired back in the 70s. It didn't get closed down to us until budget cuts, we understand those, and the fact that the Snoqualmie area was added to the Skagit area in terms of management, and the Snoqualmie or the wildlife area wasn't maintained and went into canary grass, which isn't good for necessarily wildlife, certainly isn't good for dog training. And again, through these emails, we see that the comment was made that I guess letting the canary grass grow was a good way to regulate and eliminate the dog trainers from the land in the first place, so maybe we just don't do anything about the canary grass. So we see those things in the critical time frame of 2013 after the land has gone to canary grass and about the time the new manager is coming in. And then all of a sudden the dog training area is reduced to this 10-acre plot. And what we feel right now is we're just fighting tooth and nail to get the one Cherry Valley unit increased to 65 acres, which we've already said is minimal for our basic dog training, but we certainly can't put on events. So we'd rather start with a larger area available in some of the units that were intended to be held or used for dog trials and dog training. So our starting point on the 2017 plan doesn't really give us a lot of comfort that we are looking to expand it to that larger size.
Russ, how much familiarity do you have with training Labrador retrievers, for example? I mean, do you have any? Or
I don't have any personal experience. I've visited dog training events in the Snoqualmie and also on Whidbey Island.
The reason I bring it up, they need a certain amount of diverse habitat. Sometimes hills in between ponds, sometimes two ponds, because you're training some high-end Labradors that you can actually train out to 150 to 200 yards with whistle handling and hand signals, and it isn't something you can do in your backyard. You know, you can throw bumpers and do stuff like that, but the real training of quality Labradors is an art. It's really an art. And these people, they take it seriously. I mean, they're obviously their pets, but they're a little bit more than just a pet. And the amount of training that these dogs can absorb and the things that they can do, it took me three years to get my dogs up where it was about, they were smarter than me. That doesn't say much, but two weeks. Yeah. I guess I would just suggest that someone from the department look into the dog training format and how it works a little bit. It might be a better understanding of what these folks are trying to accomplish, because it's 15, 20 acres, not going to work. I mean, it's just not doable. So,
good suggestion. Thank you. And we have 65 acres as a starting point. That's not to mean that we're going to end there. I think what needs to happen is to develop some history, working together, and learning about each other's needs and other users' needs, and to expand to a larger area, a different area, should things work out.
If you could look into it from that perspective, that would be satisfactory.
And report back at a...
Yeah. Absolutely. In what format would you like to report?
I'll just speak for myself. I think the same. I would like to hear from some of the folks that presented this morning on how it's going, and then from your perspectives, you know, where in the next few months, where have we gone, you know, and how are we getting there? So I think that I think we understand the concerns and the problems. I mean, more and more people demanding fewer and fewer land areas. I mean, we're not over in other parts of the state. We're, you know, but so it's, this is, the crowding takes place, but also this is a good activity, and these are good partners to have. And also it does involve kids, and, you know, that little picture, I don't think PETA would like that little picture, but I think that, I think it's a good little picture to put out there. So, all right. Thank you, guys. And thank you from all of the those that are frustrated handling four-legged critters.